Last year, we had a large tax cut, and for the first time in 75 years, a basic revision of tax law. It is now clear that defense and other essential government costs must remain at a level precluding further tax reductions this year. Although excise and corporation income taxes must, therefore, be continued at their present rates, further tax cuts will be possible when justified by lower expenditures and by revenue increases arising from the nation's economic growth. I am hopeful that such reductions can be made next year. At the foundation of our economic growth are the raw materials and energy produced from our minerals and fuels, lands and forests, and water resources. With respect to them, I believe that the nation must adhere to three fundamental policies. First, to develop, wisely use, and to conserve basic resources from generation to generation. Second, to follow the historic pattern of developing these resources primarily by private citizens, under fair provisions of law, including restraints for proper conservation. And third, to treat resource development as a partnership undertaking, a partnership in which the participation of private citizens and state and local governments is as necessary as is federal participation. This policy has encouraged local public bodies and private citizens to plan their own power sources. Increasing numbers of applications to the Federal Power Commission to conduct surveys and prepare plans for power development are evidence of local response. The federal government and local and private organizations have been encouraged to coordinate their development. This is important because federal hydroelectric developments supply but a very small fraction of the nation's power needs. Such partnership projects as Priest Rapids in Washington, the Coosa River development in Alabama, the Markham Ferry in Oklahoma already have the approval of this Congress. This year, justifiable projects of a similar nature will again have administration support. Now, of course, the federal government must shoulder its own partnership obligations by undertaking projects of such complexity and size that their success requires federal development. In keeping with this principle, I again urge the Congress to approve the development of the upper Colorado River Basin to conserve and assure better use of precious water essential to the future of the West. In addition, the 1956 budget will recommend appropriations to start 6 new reclamation projects and more than 30 new Corps of Engineer projects of varying size. Going projects and investigations of potential new resource developments will be, of course, continued. A great need in this broad field is a nationwide comprehensive water resources policy firmly based in law. Such a policy is under preparation and when completed will be submitted to the Congress for its consideration. Continued vigilance will be maintained over our fisheries, wildlife resources, the national parks and forests and the public lands, and we shall continue to encourage an orderly development of the nation's mineral resources. A modern highway system is essential to meet the needs of our growing population, our expanding economy, and our national security. We are accelerating our highway improvement program under existing state and federal laws and authorizations. But this effort will not, in itself, assure our people of an adequate system. This problem has been carefully considered by the Conference of State Governors and by a special advisory committee on a national highway program, composed of leading private citizens. I have received the recommendations of the Governor's Conference and will shortly receive the views of the Special Committee. Aided by their findings, I plan to submit on January 27th recommendations which will meet our most pressing national highway needs. In further recognition of the importance of transportation to our economic strength and security, the administration, through a cabinet committee, is thoroughly examining existing federal transportation policies to determine their effect on the adequacy of transportation services. This is the first such comprehensive review ever undertaken directly by the executive branch of the government in modern times. We are not only examining major problems facing the various modes of transport, we are also studying closely the interrelationships of civilian and government requirements for transportation. Legislation will be recommended to correct such policy deficiencies as we find. The nation's public works activities are tremendous in scope. It is estimated that more than $12 billion will be expended in 1955 for the development of land, water, and other resources, control of floods, navigation and harbor improvements, construction of roads, schools, and municipal water supplies, and disposal of domestic and industrial waste. Many of the federal, state, and local agencies responsible for this work are highly efficient. But public works activities are closely interrelated and have a substantial influence on the growth of the country. Moreover, in times of threatening economic contraction, they may become a valuable sustaining force. Efficient planning and execution of the nation's public works require the coordination of federal activities and effective cooperation with state and local governments. The Council of Economic Advisers, through its public works planning section, has made important advances during the past year in effecting this coordination and cooperation. To give more emphasis and continuity to this essential coordination, I shall request the Congress to appropriate funds for the support of an Office of Coordinator of Public Works in the Executive Office of the President. Now, a most significant element in our growing economy is an agriculture that is stable, prosperous, and free. The problems of our agriculture have evolved over many years and cannot be solved overnight. Nevertheless, governmental actions last year hold great promise of fostering a better balance between production and market, and consequently, a better and more stable income for farmers. Through vigorous administration and new authority provided by the 83rd Congress, surplus farm products are now moving into consumption. From February 1953 through November 1954, the rate of increase in government-held surpluses has been greatly reduced by our moving into use more than $2.3 billion worth of government-owned farm commodities. Domestic consumption remains high, and farm exports will be higher than last year. As a result of the flexibility provided by the Agricultural Act of 1954, we can move toward less restrictive acreage control. Thus, farm production is gradually adjusting to markets. Markets are being expanded, and stocks are moving into use. We can now look forward to an easing of the influences depressing farm prices, to reduced government expenditures for purchase of surplus products, and to less federal intrusion into the lives and plans of our farm people. Agricultural programs have been redirected toward better balance, greater stability, and sustained prosperity. We are headed in the right direction. I urgently recommend to the Congress that we continue resolutely on this road. Greater attention must be directed to the needs of low-income farm families. 28% of our farm operator families have net cash incomes of less than $1,000 per year. I shall later submit recommendations designed to assure the steady alleviation of their most pressing concerns. Because drought also remains a serious agricultural problem, I shall recommend legislation to strengthen federal disaster assistance programs. This legislation will seek an improved appraisal of need, better adjustment of the various programs to local conditions, and a more equitable sharing of costs between the states and the federal government. The prosperity of our small business enterprises is an indispensable element in the maintenance of our economic strength. Creation of the Small Business Administration and tax laws facilitating small business expansion are but two of the many steps the government has taken to encourage smaller enterprises. I recommend that the Congress extend the Small Business Act of 1953, now due to expire next June. We come now to the third great purpose of our government, its concern for the health, productivity, and well-being of all our people. Every citizen wants to give a full expression to his God-given talents and abilities and to have the recognition and respect accorded under our great traditions. Americans want a good standard of living, not simply to accumulate possessions, but to fulfill a legitimate aspiration for an environment in which their families may live meaningful and happy lives. Our people are committed, therefore, to the creation and preservation of opportunity for every citizen, opportunity to lead a more rewarding life. They are equally committed to the alleviation of unavoidable misfortune and distress among their fellow citizens. The aspirations of most of our people can best be fulfilled through their own enterprise and initiative without government interference. This administration, therefore, follows two simple rules. First, the federal government should perform an essential task in this field only when it cannot otherwise be adequately performed. And second, in performing that task, our government must not impair the self-respect, the freedom, and the incentive of the individual. So long as these two rules are observed, the government can and must fully meet its obligations without creating a dependent population or a domineering bureaucracy. During the past 2 years, notable advances were made in these functions of government. Protection of old age and survivors insurance was extended to an additional 10 million of our people by action of Congress. Legislation was enacted to provide unemployment insurance protection to some 4 million additional Americans. Stabilization of living costs and the halting of inflation protected the value of pensions and savings. A broad program now helps to bring good homes within the reach of the great majority of our people. With the state, we are providing more clinics, hospitals, and nursing homes for patients with chronic illnesses. Also with the state, we have begun a fruitful expansion in the restoration of disabled persons to employment and to useful lives. In the areas of federal responsibility, we have made historic progress in eliminating from among our people demeaning practices based on race or color. All of us may be proud of these achievements, yet essential federal tasks remain to be done. As part of our efforts to provide decent, safe, and sanitary housing for low-income families, we must carry forward the housing program authorized during the past Congress. We must also authorize contracts for a firm program of 35,000 additional public housing units in each of the next two fiscal years. This program will meet the most pressing obligations of the federal government into the 1958 fiscal year for planning and building public housing. By that time, the private building industry, aided by the Housing Act of 1954, will have had the opportunity to assume its full role in providing adequate housing for low-income families. The health of our people is one of our most precious assets. Knowledge available to combat disease and disability should be fully used. Otherwise, we as a people are guilty not only of neglected human suffering, but also of wasting our national strength. Advances in medical care are not available to enough of our citizens. Our nation must do more to reduce the impact of accidents and disease. Two fundamental problems confront us. First, high and ever-rising costs of health services. Second, serious gaps and shortages in those services. By special message of January 24, I shall propose a coordinated program to strengthen and improve existing health services. This program will continue to reject socialized medicine. It will emphasize individual and local responsibility. Under it, the federal government will neither dominate nor direct, but it will serve as a helpful partner. The recommendations will include a federal health reinsurance service to encourage the development of better voluntary health insurance coverage by private organizations. I shall recommend measures to improve the medical care of that group of our citizens who, because of need, receive federal, state, public assistance. To reduce the gaps in medical service, I shall propose new measures to facilitate construction of needed health facilities and help reduce shortages of trained health personnel. Vigorous steps to combat the misery and national loss involved in mental illness. Improved services for crippled children and for maternal and child health. better consumer protection under our existing pure food and drug laws, and finally, strengthen programs to combat the increasingly serious pollution of our rivers and streams and the growing problems of air pollution. Last year's expansion of Social Security coverage and the new program of improved medical care for public assistance recipients together suggest modification of the formula for federal sharing in old age assistance payments. I recommend modification of the formula where such payments will, in the future, supplement benefits received under the old age and survivors insurance system. It is the right of every American from childhood on to have access to knowledge. The education of all our citizens is therefore imperative to the maintenance and invigoration of America's free institutions. Today, we face grave educational problems. Up-to-date analyses of these problems and their solutions are being carried forward through the individual state conferences and the White House conferences to be completed this year. However, such factors as population growth, additional responsibility of schools, and increased and longer school attendance have produced an unprecedented classroom shortage. This shortage is of immediate concern to all our people. Affirmative action must be taken now. Without impairing in any way the responsibilities of our state, our localities, communities, or families, the federal government should serve as an effective agent in dealing with this problem. I shall forward a special message to the Congress on February 15th, presenting a program dealing with this shortage. To help the states do a better job, we must strengthen their resources for preventing and dealing with juvenile delinquency. I shall propose federal legislation to assist the states in dealing with this nationwide problem. We shall carry forward the vigorous efforts of the administration to improve the international control of traffic in narcotics, and in cooperation with state and local agencies to combat narcotic addiction in our own country. I should like to speak to you now of additional matters of importance to all our people, and especially to our wage earners. During the past year, certain industrial changes and the readjustment of the economy conditions of peace brought unemployment and other difficulties to various localities and industries. These problems are engaging our most earnest attention. But for the overwhelming majority of our working people, the past year has meant good jobs. Moreover, the earnings and savings of our wage earners are no longer depreciating in value. Because of cooperative relationships between labor and management, fewer working days were lost through strikes in 1954 than in any year in the past decade. The outlook for our wage earners can be made still more promising by several legislative actions. First, in the past 5 years, we have had economic growth which will support an increase in the federal minimum wage. In the light of present economic conditions, I recommend its increase to 90 cents an hour. I also recommend that many others, at present excluded, be given the protection of a minimum wage. Second, I renew my recommendation of last year for amendment of the Labor Management Relations Act of 1947 to further the basic objectives of that statute. I especially call to the attention of the Congress amendments dealing with the right of economic strikers to vote in representation elections and the need for equalizing the obligation under the Act to file disclaimers of communist affiliation. Third, the administration will propose other important measures, including occupational safety, workmen's compensation for longshoremen and harbor workers, and the 8-hour laws applicable to federal contractors. Legislation will also be proposed respecting non-occupational disability insurance and unemployment compensation in the District of Columbia. On January 11th, I shall propose a pay adjustment plan for civilian employees outside of the Postal Field Service to correct inequities and increase individual pay rates. I shall also recommend voluntary health insurance on a contributory basis for federal employees and their dependents. In keeping with the Group Life Insurance Act passed in the 83rd Congress, this protection should be provided on the group insurance principle and purchased from private facilities. Also, on January 11th, I shall recommend a modern pay plan, including pay increases for postal field employees. As part of this program and to carry forward our progress toward elimination of the large annual postal deficit, I shall renew my request for an increase in postal rates. Again, I urge that in the future, the fixing of rates be delegated to an impartial, independent body. Needed improvements in survivor, disability, and retirement benefits for federal personnel have been extensively considered by an appropriate committee. The committee's proposals would strengthen and improve benefits for our career people in government. I endorse their broad objectives. Full contributory coverage under old age and survivor's insurance should be made available to all federal personnel, just as in private industry. For career military personnel, the protection of the old age and survivor's insurance system would be an important and long-needed addition, especially to their present unequal and inadequate survivorship protection. The military retirement pay system should remain separate and unchanged. Certain adjustments in the present civilian personnel retirement systems will be needed. However, these systems also are a basic part of a total compensation and should be separately and independently retained. I also urge the Congress to approve a long overdue increase in the salaries of members of Congress and of the federal judiciary. And in my opinion, this raise should be substantial because I believe it should be to a level commensurate with their heavy responsibilities. Our concern for the individual in our country requires that we consider several additional problems. We must continue the program to help our Indian citizens improve their lives and make their full contribution to national life. 2 years ago, I advised the Congress of injustices under existing immigration laws. Through humane administration, the Department of Justice is doing what it legally can to alleviate hardship. Clearance of aliens before arrival has been initiated, and except for criminal offenders, the imprisonment of aliens awaiting admission or deportation has been stopped. Certain provisions of law, however, have the effect of compelling actions in respect to aliens which are inequitable in some instances and discriminatory in others. These provisions should be corrected in this session of the Congress. As the complex problems of Alaska are resolved, that territory should be expected to achieve status. In the meantime, there is no justification for deferring the admission to status of Hawaii. I again urge approval of this measure. We have three splendid opportunities to demonstrate the strength of our belief in the right of suffrage. First, I again urge that a constitutional amendment be submitted to the state to reduce the voting age for federal elections. Second, I renew my request that the principle of self-government be extended and the right of suffrage granted to the citizens of the District of Columbia. Third, I again recommend that we work with the state to preserve the voting rights of citizens in the nation's services overseas. In our determination to keep faith with those who in the past have met the highest call of citizenship, we now have under study the system of benefits for veterans and for surviving dependents of deceased veterans and servicemen. Studies will be undertaken to determine the need for measures to ease the readjustment to civilian life of men required to enter the armed forces for 2 years of service. In the advancement of the various activities which will make our civilization endure and flourish, the federal government should do more to give official recognition to the importance of the arts and other cultural activities. I shall recommend the establishment of a federal advisory commission on the arts within the Department of Health, Education, and Welfare to advise the federal government on ways to encourage artistic and cultural endeavor and appreciation. I shall also propose that awards of merit be established whereby we can honor our fellow citizens who make great contributions to the advancement of our civilization and of this country. Every citizen rightly expects efficient and economical administration of these many governmental programs I have outlined today. I strongly recommend extension of the Reorganization Act and the law establishing the Commission on Intergovernmental Relations, both of which expire this spring. Thus, the Congress will assure continuation of the excellent progress recently made in improving government organization and administration.
In this connection, we are looking forward with great interest to the report, which will soon be going to the Congress from the Commission on Organization of the Executive Branch of the Government. I'm sure that these studies, made under the chairmanship of former President Herbert Hoover, with the assistance of more than 200 distinguished citizens, will be of great value in paving the way toward more efficiency and economy in the government. And now, I return to the point at which I began, the faith of our people. The many programs here summarized are, I believe, in full keeping with their needs, interests, and aspirations. The obligations upon us are clear: to labor earnestly, patiently, prayerfully, for peace, for freedom, for justice throughout the world. To keep our economy vigorous and free, that our people may lead fuller, happier lives. To advance, not merely by our words, but by our acts, the determination of our government that every citizen shall have opportunity to develop to his fullest capacity. As we do these things, before us is a future filled with opportunity and with hope. That future will be ours if, in our time, we keep alive the patience, the courage, the confidence in tomorrow, the deep faith of the millions who, in years past, made and preserved us this nation. A decade ago, in the death and desolation of America, of European battlefields, I saw the courage and resolution. I felt the inspiration of American youth. In these young men, I felt America's buoyant confidence and irresistible will to do. In them, I saw, too, a devout America, humble before God. And so I know, in my heart, and I believe that all Americans know, that despite the anxieties of this divided world, our faith and the cause in which we all believe will surely prevail. And now, my friends, my apologies for the length of this address, and thank you for your great courtesy.